Hello.
Hello, this is Penny Cowan.
Hi, Penny.
Hello there.
How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm getting better.
Are you? That's hard to do both knees at once.
Yes, it is. But I know that knowing me, it would be hard to get me back in the hospital to do it two different times.
That's what I hear. I've heard other people say the same thing. It's still hard, though. It leaves you without a leg to stand on.
Well, I was in the hospital from Monday to Friday. I was in a rehab hospital for 8 days. And when I left the rehab hospital, I was climbing steps.
Oh, my.
I told them that was my goal, because when I got home, I'd have to go upstairs to the bathroom and to the bedroom. So we were able to do that.
Wow. But hopefully you're still taking it slow to allow your body to heal.
That seems to be a problem of mine.
Uh-huh. I kind of figured that. Well, hopefully the holidays will slow you down a little bit.
Well, it should a little bit. I got a son and daughter-in-law that come in from Idaho. They'll be with us for part of it, so.
That's always nice.
Slow down some there.
Yeah. So how long do you want me to talk today? For the whole hour or leave time for questions?
I would leave time for questions.
Okay. Because I can talk as long or as little as you want me to.
Okay. I have no idea what kind of numbers we'll have.
Yeah, it's getting pretty close to the holidays.
Well, and changing time as we did.
All right.
We'll see.
All right. This may be a quick call.
It could. We have somebody else come on?
Yes. Dan from Minnesota.
How you doing, Dan?
I'm doing just fine. And yourself?
We're getting better.
How are those knees doing?
They're sore.
Yeah.
They're sore.
Yeah, I hear you. Mine's still tight. I just can't seem to totally loosen that baby up yet. I don't know. It's, yeah, it's good. It's better than it was before, though. So.
Well, I find if I sit too long and don't move, I won't lock up, but it'll get real stiff.
Yeah. Yeah, you really got to get out and stretch when you drive, because it's with your leg in that position for a while, you need to stretch it out. Those old bionic knees.
How's the weather up there?
We had two gorgeous days. I got up in close to 40 for 2 days, but now it's back to zero, and it's going to get below zero, but it's
right.
Winter weather advisory for the wind and the snow and the.
Okay.
Yeah. But it teased us for a couple days.
Right. They're talking we could get a couple inches of rain on top of 7 or 8 inches of snow.
Oh, man. That rain's a killer.
Yeah.
Yeah. And she freezes up.
Right, then it becomes ice, right?
Yes. Yeah. Our first kind of rain and freezing stuff in Ortonville here, we think about 10 people I know fell in town.
Mm.
They had broken wrists and hips and concussions and, yeah.
Mm.
People forget how to walk on that ice.
Yeah.
It is so slippery.
Wow.
Like glass. Oh. Yeah. But we love it, I think.
You sound like you're trying to convince yourself of that.
I like the seasons. I mean, I lived in California for a while, but I really miss the four seasons. It
Right.
Everything was the same all year in California, it seems.
I live in California, but we have seasons, sort of.
Oh.
Yeah, well, but, you know, I live close, a couple hours away from Tahoe, so we get the snow. I just don't have to deal
with it. Oh, okay.
So, yeah, Northern California is a little different than Southern.
A little different, yeah. I lived in the San Diego area.
Oh, yeah, that's yeah. Totally.
The climate's lovely. It's the same temperature every day, almost.
That's right.
About 76 in the afternoon and drops down into, it's very comfortable.
Yep.
But you just needed one set of clothes.
That's true.
Yeah.
Unless you Florida travel.
Country, right, yeah.
If you travel, then you're in trouble.
I like going back to California to tour the vineyards. I like the all the vineyards there.
Yeah.
San Diego.
There's vineyards everywhere, I think, across the country right now.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Everybody's making wine. No matter where I go, there's local wine.
Yeah.
Who do we have? Come on.
This is Rick Geringer out in Wyoming.
Hi, Rick.
Hey, Steve. How are you doing?
We're doing.
Yeah.
Doing better.
Are you? So, is it cold out there?
Hey, it's not bad here. We're about right around 40. It's
okay.
Starting to
40.
Melt.
Yeah. That's the same here. We're having a heat wave out here.
Yeah.
Balmy.
Yeah, for sure. But it's supposed to get back down to zero again tonight.
Right. Well, we've got flood warning starting.
Flood?
I think.
Wow.
We got possibly of 1 to 2 inches.
That doesn't sound right for this time of the year.
No. And that doesn't help when it's on top of 6 to 8 inches of snow.
No. Yeah, it's Wyoming. They always say, if you don't like the weather, wait 5 minutes. Well, I think that's kind of the same about everywhere.
That's Indiana, too.
Yeah.
Who'd we have come on?
A secret caller.
I guess.
Yeah.
Maybe we lost somebody.
They got out or they left already, yeah.
We've got a couple that sneak on. So
the mystery guests.
That's right. Well, we'll wait another couple minutes.
Okay.
There's some turkeys looking at my patio door here that would like to join the phone call.
Turkey, wild ones or tame ones?
Yeah, wild ones.
Oh, really? They come right up to your door?
Oh, yeah. There's 4 males here now, and there's about 35, 40 hens. They're not, the toms are not with the females. They're separate. They just, I don't know, except in the mating time.
They're feeling left out, or they just...
I don't know if they're like Norwegian bachelor farmers or what they are.
There you go. who is this and where are you?
Oh, my name is Dan. Dan Storrs from Minnesota.
Oh, Dan. Yeah. Hi, Dan.
Yeah. Hi. How you doing?
Yeah, good. So you're probably getting some cold weather up there.
Yes. Yeah, we had 2 nice days and now it's back to zero again today and going below zero.
Oh, yeah.
Snow and blowing snow advisories. And so, yeah.
My son's going to school up in Mankato, and so he's supposed to be getting out of there in another day or two to come back home.
Mankato State?
Yeah.
College.
Yeah. He's really enjoying it there.
That's a nice area.
So, yeah, he's coming back down here in a banana belt. 5 minutes, and that can change too.
A lot of things are changing. Boy, the animal patterns around here. We had a mountain lion hanging around here recently that they're coming pretty far south.
Oh, really?
Wow. Yeah. Which is, the DNR said they're here to stay. Once they move in, they're not going anywhere.
Oh,
everybody seems to be looking for food.
Well, I suppose when you got a few turkeys around for a little food for them. And
I'm in my office right now. I got a conference call.
Yeah. Plenty of turkeys and deer.
Yeah.
I have no idea because I left about 11:30. Okay.
We got the gray wolves out here that are just big issue among the ranchers, especially that they reintroduced them out here. Now their population is really exploding, and the ranchers want the right to protect their animals, of course, and then the animal rights people don't want the wolves to be shot.
Right.
But their population's really expanded since they reintroduced them out here.
Yeah, the coyotes out here, they are tough on the chickens. Some of the other stuff.
Yeah.
They are fast animals, man. It's a blur when they run by you.
Oh, yeah.
Well, why don't we, let's get started and maybe we'll ask some others to sneak in.
Okay.
I apologize for flipping up on the October call. One of those things that slipped through the cracks. And no, I did not plan specifically to have Penny talk about pain management following my surgery. And I think Dan knows what I'm talking about.
Yes, it's a timely topic.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, it's always a timely topic.
Yes.
Definitely.
So, Penny, we'll just turn it over to you and let you and go ahead with your presentation.
Okay, so does everyone have the slides up?
Yes.
Okay. And I will just say next slide as I move on, if that's okay. That way you'll be on there. You'll be able to tell which slide I'm on. I don't have a lot of words. It's more pictures than anything. So the title of this is Living with Pain. And first of all, the next slide is, you know, what is chronic pain? And it's the number one cause of disability in the U.S. today. And according to the Institute of Medicine, the blueprint of transforming prevention, care, and education research, that it was, you know, relieving pain in America, came out with a report saying there's over 100 million people who are living with some form of pain. That's more than heart disease, diabetes, and cancer combined. So it's about one out of every three people in this country are living with some form of pain. As we heard, I know at least two of you on the call have experienced that. Next slide, the cost, you know, is more than $600 billion a year. That is a huge amount of money put into pain management, you know, workers' comp, all of those things together. So pain is a real drain on society, both physically and financially. Next slide. Chronic pain is the process that turns the sufferer from a person into a patient. And what the American Chronic Pain Association wants to do is help them move from that patient role back to becoming a person again. Next slide. Pain can be very confusing. You know, people are willing to do just about anything to get rid of the pain. It's just, it can be overwhelming. But one of the things that we know is that the biggest controlling factor in pain is the fear of the pain, never knowing when it's going to hit, because chronic pain is not 100% consistent all the time. You're not at a level 8 or 9 24/7. You have good days and bad days, and that makes it very both confusing, but also, you know, we're really afraid we never know when it's going to hit again. Next slide. Medical miracles are performed every day, so we expect, you know, medicine just to give us a pill or do something simple procedure, and bang, the pain is gone. And that doesn't happen. not with pain. And so we end up getting stuck in this complex maze of, you know, going from one health care provider to another, trying to figure out what is going on, and finding an answer to get rid of our pain. Next slide. We look to our healthcare providers. The problem is they have never been trained in all of the education that they have, and they get years and years and years of training and education. They only have 2 hours of pain management. And I recently gave a talk beginning of this year to the National Institute of Health, and there was another person there talking, and one of their comments, and it has stuck with me, it just sort of blew me away, is that, well, healthcare providers, people who take care of pain, get 2 hours of pain management. Veterinarians get 87 hours of pain management. So there's a real disparity there between us teaching them how our healthcare providers how to help us manage pain, and obviously those who care for our animals. And I know that's probably very important for many of you working as ranchers and farmers. But unfortunately, because healthcare providers don't know how to help people manage pain, they just say, learn to live with it. Next slide. And it just makes us want to scream because they can tell us to learn to live with it. But the question is, how do you do that? Next slide. So this slide, you can see this very complex formula on the blackboard. And when you tell someone to learn to live with pain, that's what it looks like. Impossible. I mean, you could ask me to solve this, and I would be there forever trying to figure it out. I have no clue how to do it. However, if I took a number of classes and really paid attention and had good instructors, they could teach me how to solve that problem. But I have to be taught. It's the same with pain. We don't know instinctively how to live with pain. Somebody's got to teach us how to do that. And remember I said, healthcare providers have never been trained, so they don't know either. Next slide. The problem is, as our pain continues on, it becomes who we are. We lose ourselves. These two guys walking down this road that's all foggy, eventually you're not going to see them. And that's really what happens to a person with pain. Our identity becomes our pain. That's it. And it consumes everything we do and say. The next slide. So what we want to do is to change that passive patient into, and their slides, I have some action on my slides, so yours aren't working, into an active participant in their health care. So next slide. So what we have to do, and this is sort of different than your typical medical model patient, is we have to become part of the treatment team. We have to begin to accept some of the responsibility. Next slide. So instead of focusing on all of our disabilities and what we can't do anymore, the things that pain have prevented us from doing, we have to begin to ask ourselves, what can we still do? What are our abilities? And begin to look at it in a different way, a different kind of attitude. Next slide. The goal of pain management is to reduce your sense of suffering, improve the quality of your life, and increase function. Nowhere in that goal does it say get rid of your pain 100%. And that is the thing that is so difficult for people to accept. Next slide. Because even when you've seen the best of the best, there may still be some level of pain that you're going to have to live with. But the key is you can live a full life in spite of pain if you take an active role and you learn how to manage pain. Next slide. One of the hardest things is trying to communicate with your healthcare provider, you know, what your pain level is. Because if I told you mine was a 6 and yours was a 6, I mean, it could be totally different. Who knows, you know, what a 6 means or a 7 or an 8? No one knows. So we've designed a number of communication tools. All of our communication tools are on our webpage. They're free. Anyone can access them. This particular one is called Quality of Life Scale. And instead of measuring your pain, we begin to measure function, because that's really where it's at. People want to be able to live a full life, and function is much easier to measure. So we flip the scale, zero meaning you can't get out of bed in the morning. So if you tell your healthcare provider you're at a zero, that's pretty clear. I mean, your life is you cannot function, period, all the way up to a 10, where you can get up, get out of bed, and have a normal everyday life. So somewhere in between, you know, if you have a 5 or a 6, there's now definitions to what that means, how it impacts your function and the quality of life, which is really important. Next slide. The other one, one of the other ones I wanted to quickly share with you is called our pain log. This is on our webpage. It's interactive. People can go in, and every day you can, because one of the problems is when you have pain, you know, maybe a month ago, 3 months ago, maybe 5 years ago, and you still have pain today and you'll have pain tomorrow, we don't see our progress. We don't see that we've made any progress. And I say it's like watching your hair grow. You could stand in front of a mirror forever, but you won't see your hair grow. But we know it grows because we have to get it cut. So we have to be able to somehow chart our progress, and doing pain diaries, which I absolutely hate, because it's asking you to keep rating your pain throughout the day, and the more we think about our pain, the more we're going to suffer. So we have to redirect our attention onto things we have more control over. So by doing this pain log once a day or even maybe a couple times a week, what this does is going to ask you the pain score, because that's the valid score that people, healthcare providers, need to chart. But then it's going to ask you to measure your stress, activity, exercise, your sleep, the fear of the pain, taking your medications as prescribed, side effects, constipation, your sexual activity, appetite, mood, how isolated you become, how worried you are, I mean, how much alcohol you consume and how worried you are about finances. As you begin to fill these out on a day-to-day, and again, it's interactive on our webpage, you're going to begin to see patterns and say, may every time you don't sleep well, your pain seems to spike. Or, you know, every time you know, the more isolated you become, you know, the more your pain spikes. However, when your mood improves, your pain goes up. So you can begin to see patterns because it actually prints out charts, graphs, so that you can see how behaviors are going to impact your pain. So how do you learn to live with pain? And the American Chronic Pain Association has designed these, what we call our 10 steps from patient to person. It's not a 10-step program, a 12-step program. It depends on individual need where they're going to start. But saying that, the first next slide is learning to live with it, accepting the pain. And for so many people, that means, you know, giving up, sitting there and not doing anything, when in fact what accepting the pain means is, for today, I'm going to have pain, and I accept the fact. And maybe tomorrow, too. Maybe it'll get better, but to at some point accept the fact that there may be some pain in my life and stop looking for that miracle cure. I mean, we've talked to people who've had 25 back surgeries, and they're looking for another one, thinking that the next one's going to fix it. Maybe they need to just say, you know, enough is enough. Okay, so I have this amount of pain, so now where do I go from here? And then the next step, the next slide, is to get involved, to take an active role in your health care. You can't just sit there when you have a long-term pain problem and expect your health care providers to fix it with just some kind of medicine. Now, I heard a couple different folks who've just had knee replacements say, you know, if you sit too long, your knees get stiff, it hurts, you got to move. I mean, that's your responsibility. You can't expect your healthcare provider to be calling you every 5 minutes, make sure you're moving, you know. You understand that. You begin to listen to your body. But you have to take an active role in the recovery process. Next slide. So for so many people, the problem with pain is, as it takes over our lives, our ability to function and continue to accomplish tasks sort of goes out the window. So we begin to pile up all these things we should do, have to do, could do, and want to do into this like little pile of things that just never get done. And at some point, we feel extremely overwhelmed because there's so many things that we need to do, we should do, that we just don't know where to start. But yet, to understand where your priorities are is really important in living with pain. The question is, do you have a reason to get out of bed in the morning? Now, I would suspect for ranchers and farmers, I think that there are so many responsibilities that you have to take care of that you may not have that choice. I mean, somebody's got to feed the animals, plow the field, whatever. You can't just ignore that. But so many people let so many other things in their life just sort of fall by the wayside. And then we ask people, you know, what is your number one priority other than those absolute responsibilities? And it's really hard for them to tell because the list is so big. It's like this big mountain. You just keep throwing everything over in this pile to have this massive mountain. So we've come up with a way to help people begin to understand how to identify their priorities. And what we ask them to do is take these little 3x5 note cards that you can get at any store and just carry about 10 of them in your pocket with a pen or pencil. And every time you think about something that you would like to do, want to do, or have to do, or should do, just write it down on a card and then put it in a safe place. And you may carry these cards and continue adding to them, you know, over the next month until you think you've got everything identified that you've sort of let slide since the pain began. And then what you want to do is you just lay them, take all those cards and lay them down on a big table or maybe even the floor, depending on how many you have, and step back and look at all the things that you've been putting off, and you think that it's not really bothering you, but yet, you know, you have this massive mound of things that you should do, want to do, have to do, and they really aren't sitting out there. They're all being held inside of you, creating more stress, and stress is going to create more pain. So you need to begin to organize them. So you step back, you look what's on every card, and ask yourself, of all of those things laying there, all of the things I've written down, what is the most important thing for me right now, today? And you pick that card up. That's your number one priority. And then the other ones you can pick up in any order that you want to, depending on where you think the needs are. And you may carry two or three of them around with you. The whole point is now you have a starting point. You have somewhere. And the rest of the cards you can set, you know, to the side or put them in a safe place and go with them. And you can begin to work through. There's more logic to all those things you have to do. And instead of laying there at night, you know, worrying about all the things that you should be doing, da-da-da, and you can't do, and it just sort of you cycle on, and it prevents you from sleeping and increases stress. So that next slide is realistic goals. And for so many people, and, you know, I'm just as guilty. I'm also a person who lives with chronic pain. Is that, you know, on those good days, remember I said pain's never consistent at the same time, and so we have good days and bad days. And on those good days, there is so much guilt and there's so much determination to get something accomplished that day that we go out and do absolutely everything we can. And, of course, what happens the next day, we can't move because we've totally overshot our ability. It's a fact that for every day we spend in bed, every 24 hours, it takes us, our body, 2 weeks to get back into the shape we were before we sat down that at the beginning of the other day. So our body becomes deconditioned very quickly. And so when we have good days, because we're feeling like, you know, we should be doing all of these things, we tend to overdo it. And that's where the fear comes in, because we obviously then tell ourselves, I knew I couldn't do this. You know, it's just too much, creating more pain. I can never do that again. And so we start eliminating things in our lives over a long period of time until there's nothing that we do anymore. And that's when that pain takes over. You lose your identity. You become your pain. So what you have to do is begin to set realistic goals for yourself, not set yourself up for failure, and listen to your body more than anything. Narrow down those goals. Don't say, I'm going to go out and plow the field. You're going to go out there and maybe start the tractor and ride it around for a couple minutes and then go back in and sit down. And I know that's not realistic for you guys. But the point is that you have to listen to your body. And when it has that first ouch, take 5 minutes. Sit down. Just let your body relax. You know, we have a relaxation. I'll talk about that next. And just let your body relax and then start again. The problem is we don't listen to our bodies. First ouch, we tell ourselves, I can do more. Second ouch comes along, we can do more. We don't stop until it screams. And if we don't begin to pace and listen to what our body's telling us, we're going to set ourselves up. And by the time it's screaming, then you're out for a couple days. But if you had paced yourself and broken your task down into small, manageable steps, you might actually be able to accomplish something. You know, it's really important for us to become aware of our body, of what we're doing. So that's setting realistic goals and again, breaking them down into small, manageable steps. Next slide. Okay, here we go. So your basic rights. And this is actually my favorite one because no one ever told me that I had any basic rights. You know, and I don't think they're on the next slide. They are on the next slide. Okay, good. So here are all your basic rights. And what do they have to do with pain management? I think they have everything to do with it. You know, so many people feel like when they go to their healthcare provider that, you know, their healthcare provider is way up there on the, you know, high on the mountain, and we're sort of sitting down there in the valley of the lowly, and we're going to listen to everything they tell us. And that's important. Except if you're really going to become part of the treatment team, you need to understand that you have as much right to be treated with dignity and respect as anyone else. You have the right to ask why. You have the right to disagree with what they might be telling you. You have the right to say no and not feel guilty. You also have the right to say, you know what, I need to think about this. You have right to stop and think before you respond. So instead of saying, okay, do you want to do this, you know, this is the test or this is the treatment or this is the medication and these are the side effects, what are you going to do? And we feel compelled to give that answer immediately. You could say, you know, I need to think about this and I will call you tomorrow. I'll call you at the end of the day once I talk to my, you know, your wife, your kids, whatever. So you do have time to stop and think before you respond. You shouldn't feel pushed into making a decision. You also have the right to change your mind. And so say you do make that immediate decision to do whatever. You go home and you think about it. I'm not so sure. You have the right to change your mind. And the nice thing about that is another basic right is you don't have to justify your behavior. In other words, you don't have to give an explanation. And that's where so many people fall into that trap of putting themselves back into the patient role all the time by trying to use their pain as that excuse. And you don't have to justify your behavior. So say, you know, your wife comes and say, we're going to go over to my mother's for dinner tonight, and you're just not feeling well, or you just don't like her, you don't want to go, and you say, I really can't, I'm really in a lot of pain today. You know, we don't have to justify our behavior. You can just say no. You don't have to explain why you want to do this or why you don't want to do it. You can just say no. You can say no and not feel guilty, and you don't have to justify your behavior, and it makes life a whole lot easier. It prevents you from always putting yourself back in that patient role. You have the right to ask for help or assistance, and that's a really hard thing for a lot of people to do. We're doing this other program called Vets in Pain, and I've gone around to, I think, like 24 VA hospitals already in the last couple years, and we're doing it again in 2014. And that's really hard for these vets because it's always been their duty. They're really, it's hard for them to stop, to ask for help, to look for somebody else. They're always right there saying, I've got your back. But who's got theirs? And I think it's so important, you know, if you're struggling, especially if you've just injured your back or even the knee surgery that we've been talking about, you know, trying to lift heavy things, maybe you need some help. And it's okay. That's one of your basic rights, to ask for help. The other one is you have the right to make mistakes. You know, we will make mistakes, many mistakes. I built this organization on my mistakes. The problem is all we have to do is to make sure that we learn from those mistakes. But it's going to happen. No one can avoid making mistakes. But I think one of my favorite ones is the right to do less than humanly possible. And again, that is so hard for a person with pain. So many of us tend to be overachievers. We don't listen to our bodies. We push because we feel so guilty that, you know, we're just going to continue doing what we've been doing all along and just ignore the pain and work through it. You know, you have the right to do less than humanly possible. And if you actually listen to your body, listen to that first ouch, take some time off. Just sit down for a few minutes and allow your body to rest. Let the muscles relax. You might be able to actually accomplish more. So these are some of your basic rights, and they're really important to help you manage pain. The next slide, we talk about emotions, and so often people are told, you know, and we've had people call and say, oh, the pain's all in your head. Well, you know, in some sense it is. That's where the brain experiences. That's where pain is experienced, is in the brain. But what affects us physically also affects us emotionally. So our emotions do have an impact on our level of suffering and on our pain and on our stress levels. And so I like to use this picture of these two people because so many people think, you know, if I just ignore the pain and not say anything, or those negative feelings I have, I can't say anything, I'll just keep it to myself. The problem is, you know, they build up inside of you. And if you look at this picture, it's hard to tell which one of this is. I made a little story up. This was a married couple. Which one has the pain? Because the problem is, it's the man who has the pain, and he is suppressing his feelings. He's holding them all inside, and he's trying to figure out, oh, I'm just saving her from, you know, not feeling bad. I don't want to inflict my negative mood on her. But she knows something's going on. And so one of the things that we know, and we actually have a manual specifically for family members, is that there's only one difference between a family member and a person with pain, and that is the family member doesn't feel the physical pain, but everything else is exactly the same, the confusion, the frustration, the anger, the guilt, and even children. I mean, we can't forget the children. I went through a pain management program. It's been 34 years now since I left the pain program. And one of the things, I went there actually because I had lived with pain for 6 years, and it just kept getting worse and worse and worse, and my ability to function was down to nothing. When I entered the pain program, holding a cup of coffee was hard for me to do. And I went there actually believing that there was nothing they could do for me. I went there to show my husband that there was no more hope, to just, you know, forget about it, leave me, take the kids. I didn't have the ability to do that. I felt so guilty about destroying their lives. So I went there to fail. And the first thing that they did when I entered the pain program is they gave me a book to read. And it was called The Angry Book. And I thought, okay, what's going on here? Why are you giving me this book? And they said, you have to read the book. It's a little tiny book. It's actually still in publication today. It's called The Angry Book by Dr. Theodore Rubin. It's a wonderful little book. And in each chapter, you know, and I'm thinking to myself, I'm not an angry person. I don't know why they're giving me this book. And in each chapter that you read, there's another form of anger, because anger is just not yelling and screaming. There's many different forms of anger. And each chapter I read, I could see myself in that chapter. And I thought, by the time I got done reading the book, I thought, my God, I'm the angriest person in the world. And I felt really bad. And I do not remember all the different forms of anger that he talked about in the book. But what I took away from that book and remember to this day, 34 years later, he talked about a slush fund. And that slush fund, what happens is just what's happening with this young couple here. You know, there's something happened. He is ignoring his feelings. He's just going to suppress them. And I look at that as, you know, Dr. Rubin talks about a slush fund. I see it as an empty bucket. And every time we do what this young man's doing and ignoring our feelings, you know, we put another drop of water in our bucket. So every time we ignore feelings, we put that other drop of water in a bucket, and we just keep dropping water in, because we don't want to upset the apple cart. We don't want to make people angry. Nice, you know, only dogs get mad, all those things that we were told when we were growing up. And we continually avoid our feelings. The problem is, at some point in time, there's going to be that last drop of water. It's going to be a little too much, and the whole bucket is going to overflow. And that's sort of what happens with our emotions when we suppress them. If we hold on to them, and we continue to keep them in there, thinking we're saving all these people, and we're, you know, we're still being that nice guy. And then someone comes along and says just the wrong thing to you, and you dump your whole bucket right on them. So all those angry feelings that you've been holding in for so long, all of a sudden you just dump them on, and the person's sitting there thinking, I just said one little thing, and you're throwing all this stuff from a month ago on me. It's like, where did this come from? Because we hold it inside, and at some point it's got to come out. And, you know, think about holding a bucket of water forever. That can get really heavy, and actually, it's not really a bucket of water. All those feelings are being held inside of us. And every time we bury another one, it increases our stress level just a little more. And stress is going to increase pain. That is a fact. You know, the more tense we get, the more our muscles are going to hurt. And if they're already sore, it's only going to increase our pain. So I I think what I always try to leave people with is that there are no wrong feelings, only inappropriate actions. So if somebody says something that hurt your feelings, you know, you can sort of, and we, one of our chapters in our workbook that we have from patient to person first step is on assertiveness. So it teaches people how to be more assertive, to express what they need, how they feel, in an assertive manner so that they don't hurt people's feelings. But there are ways to begin. If you just address each of those feelings as they happened, your bucket would never get full, it wouldn't overflow, and life would be a whole lot easier. I know it's easier said than done, but it's that awareness that you can generate in just understanding your feelings and recognizing them that's really going to help you move. The next one, and I think I, whoops, hang on. Okay, so the next slide is on relaxation. You know, and that would be really easy if we could just all go to this beautiful little desert island and lay down on that nice warm sand and listen to the, you know, the waves crashing against the shore and the wind blowing through the palm trees, we probably could relax, but that's not reality. That's not where we live. What I want each of you to do right now, just take a second, and I want you to count from 1 to 25 in your mind, and exactly the same time, say your alphabet. You can't do it. And the reason you can't do it is because you have a one-track mind. And so while you're thinking about laying on that warm, sandy beach, your body sort of contours into that warm sand, you know, and you can just hear those waves crashing against the shore and the seagulls overhead. And as you're thinking of that for those moments, you're not thinking about, my God, my back is killing me. So for that instant, you have reduced your sense of suffering. That's one of the goals of pain management. We have to be aware of our pain in order to suffer. And if we can redirect our attention, and I said this earlier, off on something else that we have more control over. Typically, when I give this kind of talk, I will play a 5-minute relaxation exercise that we actually have on our webpage. But since this is not a webinar and I can't play the videos for you, you know, it's on our webpage. It's free. There's a lot of relaxation CDs out there. We have some that people can begin to use to teach themselves. Remember, we have to learn how to live with pain, that they can teach themselves how to begin to relax. I just knocked my, here we go, from current slide, so that they can begin to listen to their body. Remember, we talked about that, listening to your body, this is the first ouch, and then telling your body how you want it to feel. And it is a learned skill, and it takes a lot of practice. When I went through the pain program, I had biofeedback, and I had 4 sessions, and the whole idea was to be able to tell your body how you wanted it to feel. And they monitored your finger temperature and then the tension in your forehead. They had little monitors on there. And so this man would sit there and read this wonderful little relaxation exercise. And my whole goal was to turn the sound off that I heard by relaxing. And the more my hands warmed up and the less stress in my forehead, the lower the sound got. And I didn't do well at any of them because I was trying too hard. I tend to be an overachiever. But the nice thing is he recorded them for me. So I took them home. And he said, practice them every day. And I did. And it was amazing to me that there was a point in time that I did not need those CDs anymore to help me relax. Because I have now become, it's been 34 years since I left the pain program, listening to your body. And it's sort of an automatic response with me. And my favorite relaxation technique is the breath relaxation, where you imagine your breath, you know, just take in a deep breath, but you imagine that it is some kind of a substance. And what does it look like? What color, what substance is it? It fills your lungs. You know, and then you hold it there for a minute, and you begin to feel that stress in your lungs. And then as you breathe out, you know, has it changed, the color changed, the substance? You know, and you just begin to think about your breath. And at some point, instead of letting your air slowly breathe out your mouth or your nose, instead it sort of goes down your arm and out your fingertips as you breathe in and out. Again, these are really good relaxation techniques. I wish I had more time to talk to you about all that. But they're learned skills, and you can actually learn how to tell your body how you want it to feel. But you've got to listen to your body. That is key. But relaxation is a key to pain management. The next slide is exercise. And the problem with people is, especially after, you know, a surgery or even a bad illness, it's really hard to move a muscle. Remember I said for every day we spend in bed, it takes 24 hours to get back to where you were. And so the muscles become deconditioned very quickly, and it hurts when we move them. And it's that fear of making the pain worse that prevents us from moving to the point. Now, you know, some people can just, you know, the determination, they get up, they get going, they work through the pain. But typically so many people, because it hurts, and this is going on over a very long period of time, if it hurts, don't do it. And that's really what happened to me for 6 years. And, you know, the doctor would say, well, you know, your pain spiked. What were you doing that made it do that? And I'd tell them, and they'd say, well, then don't do that anymore. To a point that after 6 years, I was doing so little. And I was so afraid of moving because every time I moved, something hurt. And so we have to keep moving. We have to keep moving. And an exercise program is a great way to start stretching exercises. You know, you don't have to do the whole Jane Fonda workout and do all those heavy exercises, but some kind of movement. But we have to start out slow. We actually have a chapter in our workbook, again, on exercise. We have 18 stretches in there that they're the ones that I was taught when I went through the pain program that I still do. You know, most people would take that and go, okay, I can do 18, and they do it, and they do 10 repetitions. And, of course, the next day, because they haven't moved a lot of those for a while, it really hurts. And they convince themselves that the only way to avoid that pain is to never to do that again. And that is where we fall into that trap of the fear of the pain, creating more pain. We eliminate activities. And it's sort of like, if you think about it, you know, sitting around all winter and not being able to get out and really do a lot of that physical work that you do. And that first time and the first warm day in the spring, you get out there and every muscle in your body hurts because they're so deconditioned, you haven't used them for a while. But you can work through that pain and you know there's nothing wrong. The problem with people with pain is, you know, they do think maybe something's wrong. And so when we ask people to start doing exercise programs, they need to first of all talk to their healthcare provider to get approval that they are okay for them to do. And once they get the approval, they need to start out very slow. I talked about pacing before. And instead of trying to do all 18, maybe choose one or two exercises. And I always use the example of, say, you know, doctors can do a number of these. And so let's say they chose leg lifts to do. And before you get out of bed, you know, in the morning, just lift your leg as high as you can. That's it. Don't do any more. Next morning, same thing. Before you get out of bed, just lift your leg as high as you can without any pain, and that's it. Next week, do it twice, and very slowly build that up. So you're not creating more pain, you're not afraid of moving, and you're creating some kind of a routine where you can continue to build this into your everyday life, where stretching exercises are very important for you. So again, it's all about pacing, it's about listening to your body. Next slide. The next slide is the total picture, and I talked about this before. So many people get stuck on all the things the pain has taken away from them, all the things they can't do anymore. And in our, we do a lot of peer-led support groups, and really what we're trying to do is to help people focus on what they can still do. I mean, we could all list a number of things we can't do, but most of those we just choose not to do. But we have to really begin to ask ourselves, what can we still do and build our lives again after the pain? Because if we don't begin to focus on our abilities and have that positive attitude, and I really think that 80, if not, you know, 90% of how well a person's going to do in living with pain is their attitude toward the pain. And so really focusing on that, on their abilities, gives them hope for tomorrow. It gives you a reason to get out of bed. You have your goals. You've narrowed them down to small, manageable steps. You can live a full life again. Next slide is about the total picture or the outreach. And that's really where I started. When I left the pain program, it was an actually inpatient program, which is unheard of today. And while I was in a controlled environment and did what they told me, I was able to really make that transition from patient to person, and I actually was there for 7 weeks. That was a very long time that I was there. I'm a very stubborn person, and I had gone there to fail. But what was going to happen when I had to go back home and pick up where I left off, you know, the normal routine, have, take care of the home, the family, the kids, all of that. How was it going to work? Because in the past I had tried other things, other treatments that worked for a little bit, but then they stopped working. So there was this, you know, real fear in me that maybe this wasn't going to last. I also realized for the very first time that I wasn't the only person in the world with pain, because there was a whole group of people in the pain program with me that also had pain. And what I had learned on that pain program was too good to keep to myself. And so starting a peer-led support group, and I just started one group back in 1980, that's when the organization started, really allowed me to maintain my wellness over the last 34 years to the point where now I'm a very active person again, and my pain certainly doesn't identify who I am. The next slide is, we use the analogy of a car to help people understand the complex nature of pain management. And so a person with pain is like a car, except their car has flat tires. Our expectation of healthcare is just give me that quick fix, the pill, whatever, to make me better. The problem is maybe that medication they prescribed for you is giving you 20 or 30% relief and it's filling one of your tires. That's good. And most people say, it's not enough, I need more, you know, I need more medication, whatever, or they'll up it on their own, get into a lot of trouble, overplate the tire, it blows up. What they don't realize is they still have three flat tires. So maybe they need to just leave that air right there, that 30% that relief that they're getting from the medication, and ask themselves, what else do they need to fill up their other three tires? And for each person, it's going to be different. You know, it could be a physical therapy program. It could be some stress management. Maybe it's counseling. Maybe it's acupuncture. Maybe it's, you know, a tend unit. It can be a number of other things. And once they have all four tires filled, it's our job to maintain our car. We don't take our car back to the dealer and say, fill her up or wash my windshield. That's our job. If something goes wrong with the car, then we take it in for a checkup. And we always give out these little cards when I do talks. Unfortunately, you're not there for me to hand them to you. But we now also have this little guy animated on our webpage. And when you go on our webpage, you can actually see the little animation and hear this story. And that is it, and I want to thank you for inviting me. I went through this really quickly, and I apologize, but I wanted to leave time. We have about 10 minutes for any questions that you might have, and all of our contact is on the next slide, our 800 number, and our webpage. So I will open it up for questions. Or not.
Penny, I have a question. This is Rick Geringer from out in Wyoming.
Uh-huh.
We do a series out here through our independent living center called Living Well with a Disability. I don't know if you're familiar with that.
Called what?
It's called Living Well with a Disability.
Yes.
And so I was just looking over the curriculum, and I didn't really see an area that deals with pain management, and I'm thinking that might be something it would be good to incorporate into that program, that series.
Absolutely. And we actually, a few years ago, and the reason that I'm very familiar with Agribility is a few years ago, we did a program where I went out 10 different states, and actually Wyoming was one of them, and we did a series, and it was a half-day program on living well with pain. And so I went out. But there is, on our webpage, there is a section on Agribility. We have... What amazed me is that in all of the years I've been dealing with pain and pain management, I've never heard people, any of them, healthcare providers, industry, nobody talk about your population of the agricultural workers, the ranchers and the farmers. And when I learned about Agribility, I immediately thought, we've got to help these folks. You guys are the ones that are feeding us. And I learned so much in doing the Agribility talks that I did, the Growing Well with Pain. You know, that the average age of ranchers and farmers is like 56 years old right now. You know, the kids are not taking up, so the family farms are in danger. So it's really important. So on our webpage, we have the AgriBility. We have agricultural workers. You can click on that. And we have the talk that I did in AgriBility. It's on our webpage now. And we have videos of that if you guys would like those. And it's a much longer talk than I just did for you. You know, we can send those to you. We have workbooks to teach these coping skills. So I would be more than happy to talk with you, you know, offline about helping you out to put that curriculum into the program.
Okay. Yeah, that's kind of what I wanted to find out is if they're, of course, it's a 10-week series, and each week deals with a different area, and I'm wondering if maybe at least one of the sessions, one of the weeks, incorporate the living with or pain management into that session. And so,
do you
yeah.
do these kind of presentations on the phone, or?
You mean like to have you do a presentation?
Right.
And that's what I was wondering, if that would be something we could work in, is to the sessions would more than likely be in the evening. And so I'm wondering if that would be something that you would be able to call in on, or if there is something in your curriculum that could be used in one of the sessions.
Now, I would be happy to call in as long as the schedule. I mean, I travel a lot, so yes, but I'd be more than happy to do that. And it doesn't matter to me that it's in the evening.
Okay.
So just my contact information is, you can just, you know, the is all on that last slide, just call the office.
Okay. All right, great. Yeah, we don't have anything planned right at this time, any new sessions planned right now, but that's something I'll sure keep in mind when we do get one going again.
Right, yeah, it's the new year. I think we're all winding down, which I am too. I'm actually going to be home for the next 2 weeks, which is novel for me, so I'm excited.
That's good.
Yes. Are there any other questions?
A comment. This is Dan from Minnesota, and just having gone through a knee replacement, it is just, you never really realize how little surgeons, like you mentioned, the 1 hour of pain training during school or whatever, but how little they talk about the whole culture of pain and the depression, you know,
uh-huh.
what's going to happen over the time period of recovery and how long recovery and how you deal with that. I mean, it's, here's your new knee, go home and hope you do okay, come back in 3 months and we'll take a look at it. But
right.
Yeah, unless the relief, it's depressing. You know, I got depressed and you're like, man, is that ever going to go away? The only way that really got through that part of it was talking to other people that have been through that.
Exactly. That's,
you know, and they say, you know, well, the surgeon told you that, you know, you should be 2-3 months recovery. You know, these people, they say a year. I mean, it takes a year before your body ever gets back to, and it'll never be the same, but it's, but yeah, there is absolutely no information at all for the patient or the caregiver. On,
right. Well, there is. It's hard to find.
Right.
You're
right.
I mean, that's the problem. But the surgeon did his job, period.
Right.
And
oh,
it,
absolutely.
And now, and it ends. He and I remember in California a few years ago, they had a law that to renew license, physicians had to take 12 hours of pain management. And it was actually an orthopedic surgeon that I had met when I was at a meeting in Arizona. And he was really appalled that he had to spend any time on pain management because he had nothing to do with pain. And I'm thinking, uh-huh. Right. Do you know how much pain you create every time you do surgery? But him, it was, he had nothing to do with pain. He'd go in and he does his surgery and he leaves and that's his job. And he doesn't, his job is not to help you manage the pain. The problem is it ends there and then they expect you, like you said, 3 months, come back and I'll check it. So in those 3 months, you know, it's hard for us to manage this, and as you said, you know, knowing that you're not alone, that there's someone else out there, and they got through it too, that's hope. That's hope, and
right.
that's yep. and that's what so many people need, and that's what our organization, for so many people, just saying that you're not alone is so important, and that's why the peer-led groups are so important as well.
Sounds like the doctor's solution to the pain may be just to do the pain prescribed pain pills to,
and maybe it'll put air in one of your tires and give you some relief, but again, it's not enough, and that's where everyone gets stuck. They just think I need more pills, and that's where so many people get into trouble.
Well, and they're prescribed that oxycodone and some of those narcotics so easily, and it just, they made me so nauseated I couldn't take them anyway. I mean, it just, it's something else. It is.
Right. A lot of people can't tolerate them, but a lot of people, you know, which is worse, the pain or the side effects, and that's why, I mean, there's so much missing in pain management. That's the problem. It's not just about taking the pill or having a procedure. And if you remain just sitting there waiting for someone to fix you, you would never get better. Because your knee may heal, but every time you move, it's going to really, really hurt.
Penny, I'm on your webpage, and I don't. Did you say there's a link or information?
Yeah, if you go, let me go on our webpage, because if you go up Days of Pain, let me get to our webpage here. If you go up, there we go. My computer's being slow. And see, let us guide you through the Maze of Pain. Click that. Start here.
Let me see. Wait. So let me see. I'm on your homepage.
Yeah, so right on the right-hand side.
Oh, okay, sure.
Okay, so the question is, are you an individual? Question one, are you an individual with pain? And click yes, and then hit next. And then on that, are you an older adult, or adolescent? And then are you one of the following? And we have the military veterans, because we have a whole web page for them. And then we have agricultural workers. If you click that one and hit search now, it will take you right to, it's going to take you to all those, and then the videos down below, and you'll see all the graphical tools, and I only showed you one of the many that we have, but then scroll down to the videos. The second one is Agribility Growing Well with Pain.
Okay, I see it, yeah.
Okay?
Okay, yeah, thanks.
So that's on our website.
Okay.
I think we filmed that one in State College, yeah. No, we filmed it in Pennsylvania when they did their I have another call in a few minutes. When they did their annual meeting or something in the state.
As a national training workshop.
Yeah. So yeah. So are there any other questions? I have another call in about 2 minutes, so I can take one more, and I just want to, you know, for all of you that in your, I guess it's your profession, your life's work, know that people appreciate it. And I always bring this up. And what I must tell you is no one else is still not doing anything with the agriculture workers, which I don't quite get. But every funder I've ever gone to, that's one of the things that they just say, wow. I mean, so your message is being taken out to a bigger, wider population, because I think we need to give you more attention than we do. I mean, the vets are the other thing that I go out and do, but I also think that you guys play a key role in giving us in this country the quality of life that we have. So I thank you.
Well, thank you for being with us today. Again, I apologize for screwing up in October, but
things happen, right?
That's
and you
right.
Don't justify your behavior, and it just...
Well, the problem is, you talked about me so much, you might as well put my name in that today.
But you know what? Every person that has pain, you know, it's like, uh-huh. I mean, I was talking about me, too. That's the thing.
We've joked around here with Paul Jones. He says, that'll give you something else to put on your resume. I think it does give us another perspective as we work with our clients and go through the process with them.
Uh-huh.
So,
I mean, you have to give people hope. You can't just say learn to live with it and send them on their way. And, you know, we're here. We have support groups all over the country, and those are also listed on our webpage. And if there's not one in an area where you're working with a bunch of folks, call us. We can help them start one. We actually have a workbook to do that. That's the end of the Vets in Pain thing that I do, is actually the whole afternoon I spend with them teaching them how to do peer-led support groups, and there's a video for that one as well. So we're here to help you.
Thank you very much.
Thank
all right.
You. Very helpful.
You guys have a happy holiday.
You too.
You too.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Guys, we're gonna have another call February 20th, and we'll go back to our regular time at 2 o'clock. Don't ask me who will do it or what will be on, but we've got 2 months to figure that out. So
no problem.
I remember, Steve, kind of when we were planning these sessions for this year that I think I suggested maybe I could do something in February, and I'm
okay.
kind of wondering if maybe I can talk Corey McGregor out here to do something on his Disabled Hunters project he has up there, maybe the types of equipment they use to modify modified hunting devices or whatever.
Sounds good.
Yeah, maybe I'll
lean down on it.
Yeah, I'll give him a call and see if that's something he might be interested in.
Very good.
All right.
Anything else need to bring up?
I appreciate it today. It was very, very good.
Okay, tell me again when that would be in February.
February 20th.
February 20th, okay, at 2 o'clock Eastern.
2 o'clock Eastern.
Okay. All right.
Very good, then.
Okay, cool.
Have a Merry Christmas and Happy New Year.
Merry Christmas to you, too, and we will converse later.
Take care.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Yeah, bye-bye.